Former University of Cincinnati police officer Ray Tensing pled not guilty this morning in a Hamilton County courtroom. He was fired after he was charged with murder yesterday in the shooting death of Samuel DeBose, who was driving near the campus July 19th when Tensing pulled him over for not having a front license plate. A police body cam shows it escalated to the fatal shooting within seconds. Here's Hamilton County prosecuting attorney Joe Dieters yesterday.
This just does not happen in the United States. People don't get shot for a traffic stop unless they're violent towards the police officer. And he wasn't.
Dieters also called the shooting senseless and asinine. But this is another in a string of incidents in which the victims were African-American, the officers white. And it's at a time when African-Americans are also looking at changes in voting laws, at the shooting deaths of churchgoers. In fact, next month, the NAACP is organizing a march called America's Journey for Justice, 860 miles from Selma to Washington, D.C., to call attention to current issues. Cornell William Brooks is president and CEO of the NAACP, and he joins us now. President Brooks, thanks for being with us.
It is a delight to be here and great to be in conversation with you.
Well, thank you. And your thoughts first on Cincinnati and this seemingly swift response to the incident there.
Well, on behalf of the family of the NAACP, we extend our deepest sympathies to the family of Mr. DeBose. We are heartened by this yet tragic indictment of this officer. The reason being is here we have a father of 10 on the eve of an engagement who is pulled over in a routine traffic stop, and he is, in effect, executed on dash cam. It can't be that we apply the death penalty for routine traffic stops. In any event, this is represents excessive use of force.
Is it, though, racist?
Well, where we find that African-American men are 21 times more likely to lose their lives at the hands of police than their white counterparts, if it is not racist, it is certainly racially disproportionate and racially disparate. But in any event, it is certainly troubling to Americans of any hue and any heritage because this runs counter to our highest constitutional and moral values.
Well, I'll talk more about what you'd like to see happen because there was a dash cam in the case of Samuel DeBose. That's why we know what happened. There was a dash cam in the case of Sandra Bland, who was pulled over after she allegedly failed to signal while changing lanes. And that also escalated into a weekend arrest. And then she was then found hung in her jail cell. There were cameras. People are getting to see. So let's stay there for a second.
That's right.
White Americans, many of them, are having conversations and saying, well, gee, I don't think I would have been pulled over for not signaling. So that is happening. Do you see that as a positive?
Well, yes. To the degree that we speak to one another's humanity, when we begin to empathize with one another and say to ourselves, if I were in that situation, how would I be treated? Does it matter if my heart is wrapped in black skin or brown skin? Or white skin, as citizens under the same Constitution, aren't we entitled to fair and equal treatment? Americans from all across the length and breadth of this country, when you consider these facts, consider this unrelenting stream of tragedies from Michael Brown to Tamir Rice to Sandy Bland, we have to ask ourselves, can't we do better? And the answer to that question is yes. There are police departments that do it better.
I want to ask you how you get to that, because as we said, even with the dash cams, these things are still happening. The good news is that people are seeing them. But in the meantime, tougher question maybe, is there any message maybe you'd like to deliver to the African-American community? Because there are also some watching these incidents and saying, well, why did they resist? And why did they, let's say, badmouth a cop who was asking them to put out a cigarette? Or in the case of Mr. DeBose, why didn't they just open the door and take off the seatbelt as asked? Is there any conversation there?
Well, the NAACP, we have a document called the 411 on the 50, which provides advice, particularly to young people, on how to interact with the police if they are stopped or detained. And we have, of course, encouraged people to interact with police officers in a civil, polite fashion, and yet be aware of their rights. But I want to pose this question to you. Where in the Constitution does it prescribe the death penalty for discourteous behavior? I mean, the reality here is police officers are charged with protecting people, whether or not they're courteous, whether they've had a good day or a bad day. And so smoking a cigarette should not subject you to be threatened to being tased.
Well, and the overwhelming consensus is that this was unnecessary escalation on the part of the police in these two cases. And so what would you like to see? Because the African-American community still needs policing, so as all communities do. So what would you like to see happen there?
Well, what we'd like to see happen here is effective training of police officers in de-escalation techniques, number one. Number two, that police officers are trained to encourage community trust rather than precipitating distrust. Three, that police officers are trained not to profile and to use evidence-based policing. The very reforms that we're calling for are represented in federal legislation, in the In Racial Profiling Act, in the Law Enforcement Integrity Act, currently waiting in Congress to be passed, which is why the NAACP, standing with so many others, including those in law enforcement. And this is precisely why, you know, we've announced America's Journey for Justice, because we're trying to create a grassroots movement for real reform when it comes to policing.
Well, you're also hoping, we understand, at least some members are, to resurrect a part of the 1965 Voting Rights Act that was struck down by the Supreme Court in 2013. Let's talk about that point of the march. This is the pre-clearance provision. It required states with a history of voting discrimination to get federal approval before they made any changes to their election procedures. As we said, it was struck down. There are states that are changing their voting procedures. What are your concerns there?
Well, here are concerns. In the wake of the Shelby versus Holder Supreme Court decision in 2013, Section 4B of the Voting Rights Act was essentially gutted. And what that meant was the Voting Rights Act, which is widely regarded as the most effective civil rights statute, and Section 5, which was regarded as the most effective section of the statute, were nullified. If not nullified, then certainly greatly weakened. Now, what's happened? We've seen state legislature after state legislature all across this country enact laws which have made it harder to vote, which have erected barriers at the voting booth. When you end same-day voter registration, early registration, where you make it harder for young people to vote, there may be some partisan advantage in that, but there is a great deal of racial disadvantage in that. Our challenge in this country is not preventing people from voting in order to ensure that there's no voter fraud. Our problem is encouraging people to vote because not enough people do vote.
Well, Cornell Williams-Brooks, again, president of the NAACP, I don't think there's any question that America is in the middle of a race moment over the last year. On the one hand, through dash cameras and home videos, we're being made aware of discrimination against African Americans in interactions with the police force. On the other hand, as you say and others say, African Americans feel they're seeing their voting rights erode. So what moment is this?
Well, this is a moment that by any measure is a moment for the country. I would note that there were people of a variety of backgrounds that literally gave their lives for the right to vote. When we see Latinos denied their right to vote, when we see rural voters finding it more difficult to vote, seniors and people with disabilities finding it more difficult to vote, that's a bad moment for America. So we are in the midst, I believe, of a millennial civil rights movement.
And one last question. What would you say to young people who might say, NAACP, my parents were in that. I have social media now.
Sure.
Why a march? Who walks anymore? You just go to your computer. What would you say to young people?
What I would say to any young person, what I would say to my sons who are 15 and 18, one can tweet and make a social injustice known, but to transform a social injustice into a social justice moment You have to have boots on the ground in order to enact and put laws on the books. To do that, that means showing up. That means marching from Selma to Washington, D.C., showing up in the halls of Congress and pushing for reform. We can't tweet our way to a better America. We can march our way to a better America. We can vote our way to a better America. We can stand against, but we have to be clear. Democracy is not a spectator sport. You got to be on the field.
President Brooks, thanks so much.
Thank you. It's a delight to be here.
Cornell William Brooks is president and CEO of the NAACP. We'll link you to information about their march, America's Journey for Justice, over 800 miles from August 1st through September 15th, Selma to Washington, D.C. And by the way, let us know if you are planning on going. Leave a comment at hereandnow.org. And by the way, while there, our other View from the Top conversations with America's different leaders is also archived, hereandnow.org.